Beloved, I want to greet you all this morning in the name of Jesus, the name we've already been greeted by. Just marvel at how God is able to move persons, how that all the thoughts this morning pointed us to Christ, of course, and what a further thought about is how it also pointed to what I was going to try and lay in our hearts this morning as well. I'd like to somehow, if it were possible, if the Lord gives me abilities, to connect the beginning to the ending. And it was interesting that in the devotions, Steve talked about living peaceably with our fellow man, overcoming evil with good. In the Sunday school, I gathered a thought that the spirit in our heart it's the spirit in our heart that sets us where we're at. It sets our frame of mind. He also commented that we know that God delivers what he promises. And that's one of the things I thought about this morning I was going to talk about. And then Lauren's thoughts also, we are bound for heaven. Or are we bound for heaven? We are bound for heaven, yes. But are we? It's a provoking question. Are we bound for heaven? Title of the message of thoughts that I'd like to present, the title of my message is God Promises to Deliver. Deliverance is a promise of God. And I'd like to start at where we kind of left off in the Sunday school lesson, where the children of Israel moved down into Egypt. Now, the Bible says they were there 400 years in Egypt. And when they came to Egypt, they were given the best of the land. They were living in the best of the land. But as the next 400 years went on, the children of Israel became to the Egyptians as slaves. And the children of Israel cried out to God for deliverance. If you want to open your Bibles to Exodus chapter 14, these are slaves here in Egypt. They're crying to God for deliverance. And as you Bible readers know, through the plagues and all that, finally, the last plague of the death of the eldest of all the families of Egypt, all the Egyptians, Pharaoh thrust them out of the land of Egypt. If we look at Exodus chapter 14, I'd like to start looking. Let's look at verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel that they turn and camp before Bethroth, between Migdol and the sea, over against Beelzephon. Before it shall ye camp by the sea. For Pharaoh will say to the children of Israel, they are entangled in the land, the wilderness hath shut them in. So here the children of Israel are between two mountains, the Red Sea ahead of them, and the Egyptian army behind them, and they're crying to God for deliverance. And I believe it's obvious here that the Lord turned them into this area to show that, you know, his mighty hand, to show that he was going to do here. Let's go over to verse 13. There's a lot of good reading in there, but we'll, for the sake of time, we'll go to 13. And Moses said unto the people, "Fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will shew to you today. For the Egyptians whom ye see today, ye shall see them again no more. The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace." And the Lord said unto Moses, "Wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak out, speak unto the children of Israel that they go forward. But lift up the rod and stretch it out thy hand over the sea and divide it, and the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea." Moses is saying here in verse 13, you know, fear not. Moses said, "Fear not, stand still. Look, behold what God's going to do here. See the salvation of the Lord, how the Lord can deliver." In verse 14, he says, "And the Lord shall fight for you, and you shall hold your peace." And in verse 15, the Lord said unto Moses, "Wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel that they go forward." In other words, he's saying here, go forward. But at this point, there was no way made yet. In verse 16, Moses lifts out, he stretches out his hand over the sea, and the seas parted, and the children of Israel passed through on dry ground. Let's go over to verse 21. "And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by the strong east wind. All the night made the sea to dry land, and the waters were divided. And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on the right hand and on their left." It's just amazing to me here that Pharaoh had thrust these people out, 600,000 men and women, 600,000 men plus women and children, thrust them out of Egypt. And I think if we read this, we can find that not more than less than a week, maybe 3 days, they were at the Red Sea, and now they're doubting God's power. They're complaining. They're saying, "Well, you know, we came to the sea here. There's no way to go." So God brought them here to show them his power to deliver. And I believe God does that for us today. Let's look at a couple more examples. Let's go into the New Testament, look at some examples of how God can deliver and how God does deliver. Look at John. First one I'd like to look at is John chapter 5. I think all these are well-known accounts, but I think it does us good sometimes to look at well-known accounts and bring out a couple of the little details. John chapter 5, and I'll read the first 9 verses. And I wonder if it don't look right. I'm in Luke. John 5, verse 1 to 9. After this there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having 5 porches. And in these lay a great multitude of impotent folks, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first, after troubling the water, stepped in, was made whole, and whatsoever disease he had. And a certain man was there with an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie, he knew that he had been a long time in this case. He saith unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? And the impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man, when the water is troubled, to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Jesus saith unto him, Rise, take up thy bed, and walk. Immediately the man was made whole, and took up his bed, and walked. And here at this pool, there seemed to be some discrepancy among the Jews whether this pool, while this troubling the water, was superstition or whether it was actual. I read a couple commentaries about that, but there seemed to be some superstition involved at the pool of Bethesda. But at any rate, here was a great multitude of people laying, believing that the first time they stepped into the pool, they were going to be healed of whatever disease or whatever trouble they had. Here in verse 5, there was a certain man there which had an infirmity for 38 years. And this pool was the only hope that he had. This pool of Bethesda was, to him, was his only hope. But it says here that when Jesus asked him, Will you be healed? He said, I have no one to put me in. The only hope he had, the only deliverance that he had here was out of his reach. But yet he was sitting here by the pool or waiting by the pool with hopes that somehow he could be healed. Jesus said, Rise. Verse 8. Take up your bed and walk. Where's our hope? What kind of pool are we waiting beside? The pool that we're waiting beside, is there any hope in there for us? We can have pools of prosperity. We can have pools of faith healers. We can have, list could go on. But the pool that we're waiting beside, does it really have hope for us? And he says here, Jesus says, Rise, take up your bed and walk. That's the hope we have here in this life. It's through Jesus Christ. There's a lot of religions and false hopes in this world, and I trust we need to get our Bibles and we need to look at documentation in our lives that the promise of delivering is through Jesus Christ. We can't make it on our own. It's only through Christ. Let's look at another story, another account here in Luke 19. Luke 19, I'll read the first 10 verses. And Jesus entered and passed through Jericho, and behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus, which was a chief among the publicans, and he was rich. And he sought to see Jesus, who he was, and could not for the press, because he was little of stature. And he ran before and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him, and said unto him, Zacchaeus, make haste, come down, for today I must abide at thy house. And he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all murmured, saying that he was gone to be guest with a man that is a sinner. And Zacchaeus stood and said unto the Lord, Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have taken anything from any man by false accusation, I restore him fourfold. And Jesus said unto him, This day is salvation come to this house, for as much as he also is a son of Abraham, for the Son of Man is come to seek and to save that which is lost. A couple of interesting thoughts here. In verse 3, this man Zacchaeus, he wanted to see Jesus. And then right in that same verse it says, and he wanted to see who he was. Meaning, I take that to mean that not only did he want to see Jesus, he also wanted to understand who he was. So, this man, in order to see Jesus, he needed to put some effort into it. So he runs ahead and climbs up into a sycamore tree to see Jesus. So I guess the question that I have for us today, this morning, is what are we willing to do to see Jesus? Are we willing to run ahead, climb the sycamore tree? Or what are we willing to do? We know that if we're going to see Jesus, a lot of times we have to put some effort into it. And when Jesus noticed that he put effort into seeing him, he said, come down, I must abide at your house. So now Zacchaeus, when he comes to Jesus comes to abide at his house, Zacchaeus gets to know Jesus as well, which was another desire he had. And then if we look into verse 8, Zacchaeus says, I'm willing to restore. First of all, Zacchaeus confesses, Behold, the half of the goods I give to the poor. If I have taken from false accusation, confession, if I have taken, then I'm going to restore fourfold. Two things that we need to do if we're going to see Jesus, if we're going to get to know Jesus, is we need to confess that if whatever I have that's false, and then we need to restore, make restitution. And Jesus says, because of those two things, confession and restoration, salvation has come to your house. Because Jesus said in verse 10, the Son of Man is come to seek and to save that which is lost. I think in all these stories, first thing that man has to come to, the first point that man needs to come to is he needs to come to a realization that he is lost, or that he is in need, or that he needs to see. Another account, let's look at Matthew 14. And these are a lot of similar accounts, but I want us to somehow get in our mind that God is able to deliver, and he will deliver. But we need to come to the point where we need deliverance in our heart. Matthew 14, the account where Peter walked on the water. Matthew 14, 27. But straightway Jesus spake unto them, saying, now these his disciples were out on the Sea of Galilee, and they were in a storm, and they were scared, they were frightened. And verse 27 says, but straightway Jesus spake unto them, saying, Jesus came walking to them on the water. He said, be of good cheer, it is I. Be not afraid. And Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water. And he said, come. And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid, and sinking, and beginning to sink, he cried, saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him, said unto him, O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt? And you know, I find myself in this place many times where we believe, we have faith, and we step out and we step out in faith. But then we doubt. Jesus walked on the water. But when he doubted, and I believe this is another time that God, he does the same thing for me. I step out in faith and then I doubt. And I think God allows those doubts for us again so that he can prove that he can deliver. But Peter said, Lord, save me. And the deliverance didn't come from that doubt until Peter said, you know, I can't do it on my own. Save me. And Jesus stretches forth his hand. And Jesus says, he rebuked Peter. And he rebukes us time and again if we pay attention to what he's doing. O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt? But in these situations, God always delivers when we realize or we acknowledge that we just can't do it on our own. I'd like to look at one more account here at the crucifixion, an account that's always real touching to me, and that's we look at Luke 23. Tucked in the crucifixion story here, Luke 23, verse 39 through 43. Now this is the time of the crucifixion when Jesus and two criminals were there on the cross. Verse 39, and one of the malefactors which were hanging railed on him, saying, if thou be Christ, save thyself and us. But the other answering rebuked him, saying, dost not thou fear God, seeing thou art in the same condemnation? We indeed justly, for we receive the due reward of our deeds, but this man hath done nothing amiss. And he said unto Jesus, Lord, remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom. And Jesus said unto him, verily, verily, I say unto thee, today shalt thou be with me in paradise. The first thief here, in the end of verse 39, says, you know, if thou be Christ, save us. He's looking at the fleshly, the fact that maybe this was his Maybe this was his opportunity to get down from the cross. Maybe this was his chance of being delivered. Then the other thief says, "Dost thou not fear God, seeing thou art in the same condemnation?" So he acknowledges that he's a condemned race. He's already condemned to death. He says, "Dost thou fear God?" So again, it's a situation where he acknowledges that he's condemned, and here's his opportunity. In verse 42, he says to Jesus, "Remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom." And it's that simple. It's that simple acknowledgement here that I realize I'm condemned, and the only salvation, the only deliverance I have here is through Jesus. And as soon as he acknowledges that it's through Jesus that his only hope is, Jesus says, "Today thou shalt be with me in paradise." In Revelations 2:7, you don't have to turn to that, I got it here, but if you want, Revelations 2:7, Jesus says, "He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God." I believe the overcoming that the Revelator, or Jesus is saying here, is the overcoming is not of our own power. It's we can't do it of our own. We need to have Jesus. It's by the shed blood of Christ. That Spirit of Christ needs to dwell within us if we're going to be coming overcoming, if we're going to be receiving that deliverance that God's promised here. And we saw here that, you know, in crossing the Red Sea, at the Pool of Bethesda, the man needed to be, he wanted to be healed of his infirmities. Zacchaeus was too short, and he was looking, he realized he was too short, and he was looking to Jesus for help. Peter, sinking in the water, realized he couldn't do it on his own, he needed Jesus' help. The thief there on the cross realized that the deliverance was only through Jesus Christ. So today we believe that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life, and deliverance for mankind from this earth into a heavenly kingdom is only through Christ. Let's kneel for prayer.